It's Friday, November 18th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynsey. To very few people's surprise, Aaron Judge was named the American League Most Valuable Player on Thursday night by a vote of the Baseball Writers Association of America. Not really a big surprise here that he got 28 of 30 first place votes possible. The two votes that he didn't get went to Shohei Ohtani. They were from the Los Angeles writers and their chapter. And I think that's probably the way to go there. If you were a Los Angeles writer, there's, you know, no shame in voting for Ohtani, even though Judge pretty much had the numbers and had the overwhelming sort of momentum to get the award. But Ohtani, you have to recognize that, you know, what you saw every day out there on the field with Ohtani was worthy of at least your vote.
Oh, yeah, I think definitely, Joe. I mean, Ohtani, what, hits 34 home runs, 95 RBIs, 30 doubles, 6 triples, and then he goes on the mound and goes 15-9, the 2.33 ERA, 28 starts, 219 strikeouts, Joe, in 166 innings. I mean, every season this guy is doing something we only thought could be done in video games. So yeah, definitely, you know, if you or I were covering the Angels, I think we'd probably vote for him first as well.
Yeah, it's you know, pretty much the only thing you could really do if you're a Los Angeles writer, I'm sure that they talked to each other beforehand and sort of voted in solidarity with each other there. I don't think one guy goes off and makes the decision there. As far as you know, if they were going to not vote for Judge, I think there's sort of strength in numbers in that way. If you look at, if they both vote for Ohtani, you kind of understand why, and instead of, you know, just one person denying him a unanimous vote. So something to look at. As far as the Guardians are concerned, Jose Ramirez finishes fourth.
Yeah, Jose finished fourth.
And Andrés Giménez finished sixth. Pretty impressive for Giménez to finish sixth with as many votes as he did. But, you know, Ramirez, a fourth place finish, that puts him in the top six for, you know, for the last, what, 5-6 years?
Yeah, since 2017, Joe, this guy has finished third in 2017, third in 2018. Second in 2020, sixth in 2021, and fourth this year. I mean, that's just the mark of a consistently talented player who produces every year. You know, I was looking at some graphics on ESPN or MLB Network, I forget which one, and you know, they listed a bunch of guys that never won an MVP, but it finished, you know, in the top 10 or the top 4 multiple times. Guys like Eddie Murray, and, you know, kind of Eddie Murray did it like 6 times. So, you know, just because you don't win it doesn't mean you're not a great player. And we certainly have seen that firsthand with Jose.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way that they've done the awards the last several years with, you know, announcing, having a week period there where they announced the three finalists and you know, that to me, being recognized as a finalist is sort of an award to itself. Just doing that, because we can always say, you know, yeah, a three-time finalist Ramirez has been you know, for this award, and that pretty much puts you in that category of MVP caliber player year in and year out, and that's where Jose is every year. And now with Giménez getting those votes, at least getting enough, you know, points to be, you know, considered, what, sixth place there, That's not insignificant. I mean, this was a guy who, you know, they recognized he was a two-way player, just like Ramirez, and was sort of invaluable to the lineup every day for Cleveland. Just an impressive showing by a young player in Jimenez.
Yeah, he finished sixth with 141 points, and Joe, he filled up a lot of checked a lot of boxes. He received 2 third place votes, 3 fourth place votes, like 7 sixth place votes, 1 fifth place votes, 6 seventh place votes. Then 4 eighth place votes, a ninth place vote, and a 10th place vote. So, you know, he was recognized as being a, you know, a big contributor than on a lot of ballots, you know, throughout the American League, you know, the voting, the guys that voted on the American League, the what, two AL writers from each city, you know, really recognized this guy and you know, found a spot for him on their 10-man ballot. A lot of them did.
Yeah, that's you know, we've both been through the process in these award categories before. There are guys that you run down the list and you say, okay, I have to have him on my ballot somewhere. It's just a matter of, you know, putting him in order where you want. And Jimenez was that was the case for him this year. He was named on that many ballots. I think it just goes to tell you what kind of a season he had just overall. Pretty historic for anybody from a Cleveland second baseman to anybody in the league, really. We also had on Thursday, or I'm sorry, on Wednesday night, the announcement of the American and National League Cy Young Award winners, both unanimous this year. Justin Verlander wins his third in the American League, and Sandy Alcantara wins his first in the National League. Pretty interesting to see that, you know, both of the winners were unanimous votes, the first time since 1968 when Bob Gibson and Denny McClain were the two unanimous winners in the American and National Leagues. Just you know, an impressive showing by both of them. I think out of all of the pitchers that that received votes, you know, it was pretty obvious that these were the two guys who were unquestionably, you know, it was Verlander and the rest of the field in the American League.
Yeah, definitely, Joe. And I you voted on that award for the American League Cy Young. Why don't you kind of take us through your ballot if you would.
It was pretty easy actually there at the top. I think Verlander was head and shoulders above everybody else. Just the number of wins, the number of innings, and the number of strikeouts, you give a lot of weight to those. And then my second place vote went to Shohei Ohtani. Just like we talked about before, to be able to make 28 starts while doing what he was doing at the plate, I think was the most impressive thing for me. But also to lead the American League in strikeouts per nine innings. I mean, when he was out there, he was dominant. 15-9, I still think has you know, more to do with his team's offense around him than it was you know, his pitching performance or you know, what he was able to do on the mound. Alek Manoah got my third place vote. Just consistency throughout the year, I think, from start to finish. He was an all-star, and even at the end of the year, he was performing. And then we got into a little controversy. I voted Shane Bieber fourth in the American League, and I voted Dylan Cease fifth from Chicago. And I caught a little flack from Chicago fans, and I'm still hearing it. Let's just put it this way, Hoynesy. If Twitter does decide to go away over the weekend and get shut down permanently, I won't feel bad about it because it will just be another avenue for Chicago fans that they won't be able to get at me for voting Bieber ahead of Dylan Cease. And I'll leave it at this. The reason I voted Bieber ahead of Cease was not that they had, numbers wise the same kind of year, but if you look at the last 2 months for Bieber and the last 2 months of the season, maybe the last, say, 8 to 10 starts for both pitchers, I think Bieber was the better pitcher down the stretch. He led the league, he led the American League in innings, and then pretty much every other statistical category, Cease was ahead. But Cease started off really hot and then faded down the stretch. And, they sort of had you were heading in opposite directions, trending the opposite way at the end of the season. And I gave more weight to that. I gave more weight to the pitcher who didn't necessarily have the cumulative numbers that were any better. But at the end of the year, he was the better pitcher. Whereas Cease was, fading, and his team was fading, and he couldn't lead his team to the playoffs the way that Bieber did.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, Cleveland and the White Sox went head-to-head several times down the stretch, and, the results definitely favored Cleveland, and Bieber had a part in that, so did Cease. So I think you're well justified in your rankings here, in your vote, in your ballot.
Oh, I have a clean conscience, even though a lot of the Chicago fans think I should be wearing a clown wig right now, after seeing the results, and that's to be expected. I'm fine with that, but it's hopefully the first of many times they can criticize my my decision on something like that. To me, there's a little bit more weight given to your starts in August and September, when your team is fighting for a playoff chance, and in those starts, Bieber was much better than Cease.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So that takes care of the BBWAA awards season. The Guardians, fared pretty well. I think Bieber finished seventh in voting in the Cy Young. Tito was the only Guardians winner of a BBWAA award this year, but still pretty significant. His third Manager of the Year award. Stephen Kwan fared really well in the Rookie of the Year voting. I just think it's a sign of a really good season when we're still talking about the possibility or the performance in awards presentations for a team this late in November. The year before, we certainly weren't talking about which Guardians were winning and what awards.
Yeah, definitely. And Jose Ramirez picks up a $50,000 bonus for winning a Silver Slugger, and he picks up another $75,000 bonus for his fourth place finish in the MVP voting. So not only did it help his standing as a player, but it helped his bank account as well. So that's always nice as well.
And the award season will continue on through, I guess, the beginning of December, with a few more sporadic awards. Jimenez and Ramirez and Bieber and Class A are all finalists for all MLB awards. That's the first team and second team award that are voted on by fans and also by coaches and other people around the game. So those announcements will be made in the next couple of weeks, as well as the Reliever of the Year award and the DH of the Year award. Those are coming out next week. So still some awards possibilities there. I think Class A is pretty much a lock for the American League Reliever of the Year. I saw a poll somewhere where it was a national poll where they wanted people to vote on who the better reliever was, Edwin Diaz versus Emmanuel Class A, and Diaz was the overwhelming leader in that poll. And aside from a catchy trumpet intro, I think that's the only area that Class A was sort of lacking behind Diaz this year. Maybe more strikeouts for Diaz, but certainly more saves, more appearances, more dominance for Class A.
Oh, I agree with you 100%, Joe. I mean, Diaz, did have the advantage in strikeouts. I think he struck out over 100 guys in, 63 innings. But everything else, you know, favored Class A. Class A, you know, led the big leagues in appearances with 77, with saves and 42. I think Diaz had, 30, 33 saves, something like that, you know. So, I mean, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, obviously. But when you see players every day, it really gives you an insight into their performance and how their performance is linked to the ball club. And, without Class A, the Cleveland does not have the season it did. And he was, with that bullpen, he was the goal in that bullpen. When the bullpen took the ball with the lead, their goal was to get the ball to Class A in the ninth inning so he could slam the door. And he just had a remarkable season doing that.
Yeah, and I'll say this, Diaz did have more strikeouts than Class A, but I firmly believe that if Class A wanted to have 100 strikeouts this past season, he could have had 100 strikeouts this past season. He could have struck out 100 guys, but the fact that he didn't strike out 100 guys actually made him the effective closer that he was. He sort of learned that if he pitched to contact, he could get guys out quicker. His outings could be shorter. His 10 pitch outings would, there would be more of those, and he would be able to last longer and be more effective. And even, just the way that he attacked guys, getting them to swing and put the ball in play early, really helped him, and just be as effective as he was. I think if he stood out there and tried to strike everybody out, I think he would have been a little less effective and probably wouldn't have been, the kind of closer that the Guardians so desperately needed. And that's an ego thing. That's a guy recognizing, hey, if I do it a little bit differently, I can be more effective and be that guy for my team. And Class A, because we talked to Class A when he was named an All-Star, he said, all I want to do is go out there and strike guys out. He said he wanted to go out and strike out guys in the National League. And well, he went out there and did it in the All-Star game. So that was, you know what his mentality is. The fact that he was able to make that adjustment in his second full season and really just become the closer that he did, it's impressive, and it really speaks a lot about what he wants to do for this team.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I like what as soon as the Cleveland got into the postseason, Terry Francona became Joe Torre and started using Class A like, Mariano Rivera. I mean, if he got close to a save in the eighth inning, Class A was going in there, four or five out save, and that shows you how much he was depending and how much he trusted Class A.
Yeah, flashes of the 2016 Tito, where he was going to ride those guys in the bullpen pretty hard if he got the opportunity, and he did. So also very impressive. So there you have it for the awards so far. And that brings us to today's sort of significance the non-tender deadline is here, and at 8 o'clock tonight, we'll know which Guardians players of the nine who are eligible for free agency are tendered contracts. Actually, the entire 40-man roster needs to be tendered contracts. Otherwise, they become free agents and get added to that pool. We have an indication from the club that perhaps some moves are afoot. Maybe there's a trade being worked. Maybe there's the decisions are being made on some of these young guys. What's your sense of what could happen tonight before 8 o'clock as we're looking ahead to this non-tender deadline?
Yeah, Joe. I mean, like you said, there's nine players eligible for arbitration, and they, you know, they have to be offered contracts. You know, I would think they might do some deals. You know, Luke Maley is one of them. You know, perhaps Maley, you know, is non-tendered, or perhaps, you know, they give him an opportunity of signing a one-year deal now, today, like a make it or leave it kind of proposition. If not, then he becomes a free agent. You know, so I think, you know, they'll go through a lot of those. You know, Ahmed Rosario is an interesting case. Is he a multi-year deal candidate? Could they, you know, start work on that, you know, by offering him a contract and then kind of build on that and maybe, you know, get, offer him a 2 or 3 or 4 year deal, you know, sometime in spring training, you know, that, that would be, you know, come to fruition in spring training. Josh Naylor is another interesting case. You know, I'm sure they'll offer him arbitration. I mean, a contract, but you know, just you can go down the list. It's, and it's kind of a, you know, a situation where, you know, can you create, you know, openings on your roster by maybe non-tendering a guy, making him a free agent, by not, and still, you know, keep the integrity of your roster intact, where you're not hurting it too much.
Is maybe a guy like a Cal Quantrill, a guy who they could, you know, get a surprise deal done with on a multi-year thing to cover some of his arbitration years. Is that a guy who figures maybe he could fit in the plans here for a few years down the road?
Yeah, that's a great point. We'll have to see how, you know, Quantrill certainly has had, you know, really two, you know, really kind of breakout seasons for Cleveland. This past season, what, he led the rotation going 15-5, 32 starts, 186 innings, you know, just had a, you know, kind of an outstanding year. You know, would he be willing to do that? You know, that's, you know, we're, you know, I think they've had a kind of a tough time selling that to, you know, certain pitchers, starting pitchers especially. You know, I don't know if they're following the Shane Bieber's lead or not, but, you know, that would be, you know, that would be something I think they would definitely have an interest in. You know, he's young, he's, you know, he's durable, you know, he's really kind of, you know, a great, I don't know if he's a lead dog starter, but he's certainly, you know, a 2 or 3 and a stabilizer in a rotation.
Yeah, he's an innings eater for sure. And that's sort of what you want to look at, a guy who you can help to build up that rotation and fill it out, certainly. Yeah, really, just that indication from the club that, you know, something might be afoot here, whether it's a you know, some sort of big trade or you know, announcement on some multi-year extensions or anything like that. I think all of that is in play here before 8 o'clock. We'll find out what is going to happen, and it could go a long way to sort of indicate what the next couple of months are going to look like for the Guardians as they get deeper and deeper into free agency and to see where the holes that they need to fill are going to be.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if it's, we're going to see an earth shattering here, but you know, I think, you know, we saw it earlier in the week when you know, they added 3 players to the 40 man, you know, made a couple trades with Nolan Jones, who they traded another guy. Who was the other guy they traded? Nolan Jones.
Carlos Vargas.
Yeah, Carlos Vargas. So it could be, you know, kind of just, you know, kind of just, you know, Not doing some deals on the margin to, you know, get the rotation, get the roster where they are in, you know, in preparation for the winter meetings and, you know, and the kind of the trading season and how to improve it. So maybe, you know, this is, you know, just the first of many steps here.
Yeah, first of many. I think and as far as dealing top prospects or dealing away guys around the 40 man right now, I'm going to trust in what Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff have done on their track record in the past and just sort of see where this takes them over the next couple of days and weeks here. We'll definitely be monitoring that. I brought this up a little bit ago, but the possibility that that Twitter could be shut down over the weekend. I believe with the change in ownership, the company is sort of the future of the company is in doubt, as a lot of people were sort of let go yesterday. If Twitter goes away, are you going to be disappointed? Is Major League Baseball going to be disappointed? I mean, this is has come to you know, be sort of a big way that we communicate within our job and communicate, you know, what we learn and what we've written and what we do. It's a good way to get information out there pretty quickly. Are you and is baseball going to miss Twitter if it goes away?
Yeah, I mean, it has become, you know, an integral part of doing our job and, you know, keeping track of what's happening in the industry. You know, I don't know if there's anything as you know, kind of fluid, if there's another, you know, platform as fluid as Twitter and as quick as Twitter, you know. So it, yeah, it would, I think it would, I don't know, there's some aspects of Twitter that you won't miss if it goes away, but certainly the immediacy of it would be missed, I think, by reporters who, you know, are kind of out there to get the jump on it, to be the first on Twitter to announce a trade or a signing, you know, or, you know, a roster move. You know, it's become kind of a competition. And, you know, I think in some ways it's detracted from journalism. You know, 44 characters, you know, it's hard to tell the whole story in a
Come on,
short
Hoynes.
tweet.
They haven't been at 44 characters in years. It's 280 characters now.
Well,
Come
200,
on.
whatever it is.
But you're right. I think, you know, I won't be sick of I won't miss the national guys whose agents are the same as some of the players, you know, getting the scoop and getting the jump on some of these big trades and leaving a lot of the local guys who maybe don't have those connections, sort of holding the bag there when it comes to these big trades and these big free agent signings and moves. It's kind of crummy when you have to hear about it on Twitter first and then get the information from the club.
Yeah, that's you know, that's always been a thorn in the side, and it just makes you know, you realize you have to work harder at it. And you know, it's just another aspect of the job that, you know, 20, 15, 20 years ago did not exist. And it's made the job more competitive, and it definitely you know, keeps you up at night. And it's, you know, it's like a 24/7 thing right now. And so, you know, that aspect, I don't know, Joe. I don't, if Twitter goes away, something else will take its place. So I don't think that aspect of the job is ever going to go away again.
Yeah, Hoynesy, I've been around since 44 characters. I think that's he's survived so much. All right, Hoynesy, that's going to wrap up this week on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. Lots to look forward to over the weekend. We'll wrap up the non-tender situation on Monday, and we'll be back at it here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll talk to you again.
All right, Joe.